Hello, this is Dr. Dimitrios Kostopoulos, and this is another episode of Precision in Clinical Practice, where you can boost profits and patient outcomes with diagnostics. And today we have something very special for you. Innovate your way to success. So we will present a path to financial freedom through innovation in your clinical practice. Very interesting ideas that you can implement right away. So let's listen to our episode. All right. Hello, everyone. I'm Dr. Dimitrios Kostopoulos, and this is another episode of the podcast, the Precision in Clinical Practice, and also a part of the webinar series PT Innovation 2024. And today, I'm extremely happy because we are going to approach a topic, the topic of finances in a physical therapy practice, but also looking at specific solutions. Solutions not that are untried solutions, or solutions that only theory, but solutions that are practical, they have been tried and succeeded. And I have with me Dan Sage, who is a private practice physical therapist. I met actually Dan, over 10 years ago now, Dan.
Yeah.
And Dan, not only developed his physical therapy practices in the state of Florida, but also went through some difficult times, especially on the financial front, like many other PTs are currently going, but he was able to identify very specific solutions, and he ended up actually selling his practices not too long ago with one of the highest multiples recorded in the history of the PT industry. So discussing with an expert who has gone through all the phases, the good and the bad, and the good again, it's very important. So Dan, welcome. Thank you for joining me today. And just I know that you have brought with you also a deck of slides to present, but give us a little bit about the history, how things started with you and your physical therapy practice.
So I started in 1998. We reimbursements were phenomenal back then for us. We grew the practice pretty quick. In 2003 or four, I put aquatic therapy in our clinic. So we were really the first private practice other than like the YMCA to put indoor pools. So it attracted a lot of people. Business took off for us. In 1 year, our clinics were more profitable per square foot than Costco. I mean, we were making a ton of money. We were packed at the seams. We were making a lot of money, and it was great. And fast forward in 2012, we went on about a 1.5 year aquatic therapy audit with Medicare, and it was a bear to get out of it. They didn't pay any of our aquatic therapy for a year and a half. And financially, it was, it was extremely challenging because that was a good size of our practice. And then we got introduced to diagnostics in 13.
How would you compare some of the challenges that you had back then to some of the current challenges of the PT industry right now? Yeah. Because I'll tell you right now, everybody is challenged with decreasing reimbursements, the threats specifically of Medicare. And quite frankly, when we're talking about Medicare and we say, okay, Medicare is going to decrease the reimbursement by 3%, or 3.5%, and then they end up decreasing it only by almost 2% because there is some fix from the Congress. This is a fallacy. This is a wrong idea if we think that the only effect of that decrease took place on Medicare. Because look at this. What determines the reimbursement rates for most insurances? What determines what is called reasonable and customary rate? Most of these rates, and check this out, most of these rates are somewhere between the reimbursement you get from Medicare and the reimbursement you get from the regional workers' compensation fee schedule in your region. So take a look at that and examine. So you are getting a multiple or a percentage of a Medicare rate for most insurance carriers. Either you're going to get a 90, 80, 70, 60, or 110, 120, 140 of that Medicare schedule. Yeah. So then a small decrease, 2, 3%, it is not only affecting your Medicare carrier, but it cascades to other insurance companies. So reimbursement, recruitment of staff is very important, and people feel that they have no more time. Their profit margins are shrinking. So how do these problems of today, how do they compare with what you had back then?
Well, it's interesting because back then we, in 13, we weren't really going through much declining reimbursements yet. What I felt a pinch in my practice was we had no cash flow from aquatic therapy coming in. And to be honest, at that time, when we talked about diagnostics and the investment of it, I could have easily looked at it and said, well, it's not the right time. I got to get off this aquatic therapy audit and get income coming back in. But we made a decision to implement diagnostics for many different reasons. But what I didn't know then that I know now, it was the single best thing that ever happened to my practice, because when we were hitting declining reimbursements, and this is the God's honest truth, it didn't really matter because our diagnostic business contributed so much to our EBITDA and our valuation that when I sold my company, fast forward in 2020, the value was significantly higher without diagnostics. Forget about it.
See, so tell us a little bit about that experience and how was it for you, especially when you started this?
In terms of diagnostics and selling the practice? I mean, look, the bottom line for me was, and for everyone that's listening, when I put diagnostics in the business, the number one thing, number one reason was it had to serve a purpose. And the purpose was, one, it had to elevate the game for my clinicians. The sensitivities in our special tests, at best 50, 60%. A Sperling's test is 30%. So in reality, my therapist could be evaluating, calling something one thing, and could be missing it 70% of the time. That's real. And that's an issue. And then they're treating something that's really not. So, and my thesis in PT school was on autonomy. And I said to myself, well, diagnostics elevates the game of the physical therapist. It helps them practice with a level of autonomy. It improves the accuracy of making a diagnosis. Treatments become much more effective. Outcomes get better. That checks off the box of professionalism and separating ourselves and our competitors. And that had to withstand, that had to be primary, because the purpose wasn't money. Because if the purpose is money, it's never enough. Money was a byproduct of a great service and a great exchange with our patients. So when we implemented diagnostics, it was the best thing that we did, because again, I didn't really know and back then I wasn't even looking at it from a EBITDA valuation exit standpoint. You know, it's 10 years ago. I do take risk. And I believe in practice, we've got to be ahead of our competition, and sometimes you got to pull a trigger. But what it did for my practice when it came down the road was, you know, it set me and my family up.
Now, Dan, we keep saying the word diagnostics, but especially those people who are watching the were listening to the podcast version, they may not have a concept of what we're talking about. What we're talking about when we say diagnostics.
So in terms of diagnostic testing, we were performing EMG testing. We were performing nerve conduction studies, musculoskeletal ultrasound, other tests like somatosensory evoked potentials, VNGs for balance. I mean, at the therapist's disposal was a variety of these diagnostic tests and CPT codes that were only in the hands of neurologists and physiatrists. PTs aren't playing in that sandbox. And with diagnostics and getting my therapist trained and putting that in our practice, now we have at our disposal CPT codes that are only in the hands of physicians that the insurance carrier is reimbursing significantly for, because there's a ton of money contributed to diagnostics that it was a complete separation for us.
Now, listen, the inclination that physical therapists have, especially when they are running into a financial situation, is like, okay, I need to increase my patient visits. I need to increase my new patients. I need to increase my patient visits. How does that play out?
Okay. And so this is very interesting. And I was thinking about this because when I, you know, it's tiny is everything. So when I sold my practice, the trailing 12 months EBITDA was the highest it's ever been for us, which that would have been around 2019, those 12 months, because we sold in 20. And, you know, we got the greatest value for the practice, new partnership, great partnership. But like anything else, things change a little bit. You know, you start following their policies, their procedures. So some things, when it came to diagnostics, they didn't necessarily champion or follow or facilitate the way I did when I had the practice. And I could promise you some of those things hurt expanding the diagnostics of what it did for me for the prior 10 years and my exit. I absolutely watched when I sold my business and our EBITDA was very, very strong and our diagnostics was extremely strong. Then I watched when we got married to our partner, things were, you know, going pretty good, but then some things start changing. And from my viewpoint, they changed not for what I thought was the best in terms of what my prior life was like for the prior X number of years. And I saw exactly what it did to our profits. I saw it exactly what it did to my trailing 12 months. I saw it exactly what it did for our profitability. And I got to be honest with you, to this day, the push is continued. Oh, get the therapist to, you know, bill 4 units per hour. Because even if it's Medicare, we're a big federal-based practice. You can use the group code. It's untimed. And really push the therapist to use dynamic codes like neuromuscular rehab, Theract, Gait, not just Therex and manual therapy. So we pound our therapists into, you know, hey, diversify your coding. Why are you billing 3 units for an hour visit? So much focus was on that and percent arrival. And those things will make a difference. Don't get me wrong. But when the reimbursements are declining, we're chasing and putting all our efforts on a service that keeps going down in value. And they were putting less emphasis on a service that's paying 6 times higher. If I can make $600 in an hour versus $90 in an hour, why aren't I pushing on those areas that we already know provide a level of service that's unmatched in patient care? So I watched what happened when we didn't push those lines the way I used to, and I watched what it absolutely did for our EBITDA and our profit margins completely.
Now look, The natural inclination, as I said, first is, okay, more visits, more new patients, change your coding and all that. The next natural inclination is for people to say, okay, what cash paid programs we're going to have? And quite frankly, you know, I'm attending all the big APTA meetings, right? Year after year after year after year, you know, in those meetings, they are pounding cash-based programs, cash-based programs, the lasers, the special electrical steams, the orthotics, the massage, the whatever things that will result somehow in a cash-based capacity. I know that you did put in your practice some of these programs. What's the difference between putting and the effect on putting some of these cash-based programs versus putting diagnostics?
Well, you know, we did that. We bought a laser, and it was amazing. Actually, the laser was interesting. We did the laser. We did some free demos on patients. They got value in it. They bought a laser package. So at best, if we brought in, I don't know, $100,000, $150,000 a year in laser, so it didn't make the splash near of what we made in diagnostics. I mean, everyone on this call are smart leaders in your sphere, in your area. And doing a laser versus providing a diagnostic service to a patient at $600, $600, maybe more, that splash is so much more significant. And you're right, because people are chasing these cash-based services, or let me try this new service line, or let me do cupping, or let me do this. And not that it's bad, it's good, it serves a purpose. But diagnostics serves a purpose. It's unmatched in terms of professionalism, in terms of more effective treatment plans and outcomes. And we get reimbursed for it at a level that's usually offered to a physician.
The other challenge that I've had time and time again, whenever, at least in our practices, we try to put cash-based programs. Okay, we have some, but literally you have to spend so much time and energy to train every single therapist to be able to sell that cash-based program to a patient, right?
Yeah.
Because it's not like insurance, it is a cash-based program. Mm-hmm. While at the same time, because these tests, the EMG, the MSK ultrasound, the Evoke potentials, they are paid by insurance, there is no reason to sell it to someone. It is something that they need it, you know, medically, they need the service. You will get 62% better outcomes at the end of the day through research that has been done. And you don't need to sell it to anyone. You do it, insurance pays for it, and everybody's happy. You know, you talked also a little bit about reimbursement. I know that you have a deck with slides. If you can share some of that with us so that we can get a little bit more of an idea of how specifically this solves the problem, and what are the current pressures that we have and in the various areas of PT.
Yeah, I mean, I can go through as much or as little as you guys want here, but, you know, I created, this little webinar here looks at profit margins, what we've seen in profit margins and why, how inflation affects us as practice owners, the concept of right now owners are working harder and harder for less and less. I mean, I talk to practice owners all the time, and everyone has the same barrier, time. Maybe it's not the right time to do something different. Maybe, you know, I can't invest my time in learning how to do diagnostics because I'm treating patients. Well, why are we investing so much time seeing a patient for a declining reimbursement versus spending time learning how to do something that's paying us 5, 6, 7, 8 times higher? Our value goes up and we'll get paid for that. So that's an idea. The difficulties in recruiting, retaining PTs, and the idea that practice owners, practice leaders, managers, your jobs are to get EBITDA up. And we're looking at year after year, EBITDA is not going up if reimbursements are going down and the cost of living is going up. So in terms of profit margin squeeze, you know, this is a quick snapshot and shows the conversion factor from 2019 to 2024. From 2019 to 2024, we have a 10% decrease in the conversion factor. It makes no sense. As a practice owner, I would bang my head over a rock because it makes no sense. How could we be getting paid less than we did in 2019 and our costs of living and service and everything is so much higher now? Why is the value of what we're doing going down? It doesn't make sense. And it's something that we shouldn't stand for, because I believe in what we do as PTs. Just a quick graph here that shows in blue, the conversion factor in 1998 was over $36. And in 2022, it was about $33. And in 2023 or 2024, it's now down to $32. This should be an alarming stat for people in practice, because the conversion factor, like we know that with the relative value unit, determines the fee schedule, and it's going down. And if you look at the conversion factor, if it was adjusted for inflation in orange, that should be going up. So things are going in the wrong direction, and we need to do something about it, because otherwise, you know, the practice owner is chasing their tails, continue to treat people for less money. It makes no sense.
Dan, that's pretty interesting, the slide that you showed before that shows that the conversion factor should have been around $70 right now, which means that kind of the reimbursement, the average reimbursement for a Medicare patient should have been around $200 a visit or more versus to what it is right now.
Yeah, our Medicare reimbursement in the mid-2000s, I'm sure people on this call, we're getting $110, $120 in South Florida. Now we get, at best, if we do 3.6 units, $78, $80. Can't live like that. And we can't fulfill a purpose in helping our patients and facilitating our practice with those kind of reimbursements. So, so the challenges in private practice is declining reimbursements. We don't know what the insurance carrier is going to do year to year. Every year is a guess. You know, I didn't think the 15% cut on assistance would come in. It did. Multiple payment procedure, sequestration. It keeps crushing us. So we have an uncertainty in our reimbursements. We have an uncertainty in what our profits are going to look like. And we can't afford the high salaries that PTs require and competing with other settings, you know, in terms of hiring therapists. Look at the national average on salaries from 1997 to 2022. Almost $100,000, and it's more now. And even right when I exited my practice, when I looked at this slide here, I have directors making $100,000. I'm not saying that that's a ton of money, but they're treating 80% of the time at a reimbursement of $80 a visit. We can't keep the lights on like that. Our profit margins are now sub 10%. It's not a sustainable model. Again, just, you know, showing the PPS, APTA data that just shows the declining profit margins. The new norm in profit margins is probably 10%. I mean, in this study here, the percent of net income averaged about 8%. That's a significant issue. You can't, you know, the bank account starts dipping when your profit margins are getting below in these kind of numbers. And look at the six-year trend in reimbursements. 2016, a 14% profit margin, and 2022, 7%.
The interesting thing is that these profit margins are from people who are the movers and shakers in the industry. Those are like the gung-ho APTA members that they participate in these in the KPI study. So it's pretty interesting.
Yeah. I mean, it's just a significant situation. And some data for you guys too, in terms of the shortage of PTs, because in 2000, I was like, why can't we hire? Where are these PTs coming from? Well, you know, how come we can't get them in here? What's going on here? Well, according to APTA data in 2022, the job vacancy in an outpatient setting was 17%. In 2021, more than 22,000 PTs left the workforce. That's almost one-tenth of the total workforce, 22,000 PTs left. Some to retirement, but, you know, many to other reasons. They left the profession. So you take that. You take that with Medicare cutting. You showed that the conversion factor slide earlier. Year after year, we're getting cut. And this is interesting, too, for the small practices out there. 10 companies, both private equity and public, are controlling 20% of the market now. So the big players are the ones that are navigating these waters you know, to the best that they can. I guess what that meant to me was it's harder and harder for the small business owner to make this go and expand like you want to because of what's going on. Student loans are hitting almost $200,000 for schools. If they're starting with an $80,000, there's less interest of people even going into PT school. You know, so for the owner, decreased reimbursements, you're getting paid less. There's a shortage of PTs, so you have to pay them more money. And I will say this too, you know, I'm on this private practice thing in Facebook, and the guy posed a question, well, what do you think is most important to students coming out of school? And of course, I put in there, they want to make money. And I get it. Yes, they want mentoring. They want to be guided. They want to be in a very ethical setting where they're not getting thrown in to see 30 people a day. And I value that and I respect that. We had a great mentorship program, you know, and we do our best to phase new grads in. But they want to make money. That is important to them. We shouldn't shy away from the concept of money. Money is a form of fuel that allows us to fulfill our purpose in what we're doing as leaders in the industry. So anyhow, we're competing with these high salaries. We have these labor costs that are an all-time high. Look, I guarantee people on this call, before COVID, you were paying a front desk person $14, $15 an hour. They busted their butt. They worked hard. That was my reality. Post-COVID, you know, they were home. And when they came out into the workforce, they demanded $20 an hour. And I cross my finger on my toes that they show up for 5 days straight. And this is the trends that we're going through. These are the wars that we're navigating. So the owner, the leader, the manager is working harder and harder. The directors are treating more and more. And the value of our practice is dropping and you become a slave to the practice, you know? So in terms of just how I overcame that, yes, we put diagnostics in. We increased our profit margins, our practice valuation by about 30% with diagnostics. I did receive the highest multiple in our brokerage, and that's not a bragging point. It is a promotion point to help every practice owner and leader that's trying to raise EBITDA, because I believe in what we do, and I believe in the private practice physical therapist. So and I could have stayed with my partnership. I didn't, because my purpose now is to work with private practices and help them get to the levels that they want to get to create freedom of time, freedom of money, because you deserve it, because you work hard, you created the idea, you put the practice there, and the practice has to work for you, not you working for the practice. And it's harder than ever to do that. So long and short here, I mean, this is quick. I can go through this, Dimmy, but you know, we have experienced practice owners. They're 10 years in practice. They have seen declining reimbursements. They saw what their reimbursements were years ago. The experienced, seasoned private practice owner that's on this call, you saw your profits a long time ago, much higher than what they are now. You saw your expenses much less in terms of what they are now. And you want to get the greatest financial exit possible and build a legacy for you and your family, but it's in jeopardy. It's hard to do that now. Then I call this the moderate experienced owner. 10 years, you know, greater than 2 years, less than 10 years, you're in a growth phase. You guys want to put service lines in, you want to expand your business, but you're challenged by decreased reimbursements, profit margin shrinking, you can't find staff, so how are you going to grow? I hear this all the time from owners. And then I talk to the new one. The new owner is less than 2 years, you're jacked up, you're excited, you got this purpose, this idea. It's like, you know, you don't know what you don't know yet. But all of a sudden, you run your practice and you see how hard it is in terms of profitability or hiring staff. And one thing all practice owners have in common, I don't care how long you're in practice, the questions that you should be asking yourself, the hard questions is, how are you going to improve your profit margins when reimbursements are declining? What are you going to do? You know, there are ways we can improve our profit margins, right? Get therapists to see more patients. Get our patients to adhere to their schedule more. Yeah, you'll make a little splash with that, but not the splash that's needed. You know, as a practice.
Just to interject for a moment, what you said before that ties so nicely with this point you are making right now is, what is the responsibility of the owner What is the statistic of the owner? Is it how many visits per week? Is it how many new patients? Is it how much income? But at the end of the day, the income and the profit, the EBITDA, as you said before, that bottom line is really the most important statistic of improvement or non-improvement for the private practice owner.
Yeah, because, there's no question about that. Yeah.
Because you may be seeing, you may have, let's say, I don't know, revenue of so many millions of dollars, and your profit margin might be, I don't know, let's say your profit, your net profit at the end of the day can be, I don't know, $500,000, or you can have a much less revenue, but the conditions in your practice are such that your profit margin can be $800,000, $900,000.
Yeah.
So that's interesting.
Yeah, and I'll touch on that too. And, you know, because I do completely agree, the purpose of you guys as owners, directors, leaders, managers, is to raise the EBITDA, raise the valuation. And that the more that you're stuck in the practice, the more that you're frustrated. I talked to a guy, great guy. He acquired a practice. It's 2 hours away. They don't have a PT. He drives to that practice twice a week, 2 hours there, 2 hours back. He's a slave to the practice, so he's frustrated. He's 12 years in practice. He's thinking about selling. You know, so the problem there is the owner can't create. The owner doesn't have the energy. The owner is not injecting vitality into the team, and that is the job of the owner. But that can only happen when you're focusing your attention and your time on something that's building value. And I argue to say that an owner that's treating patients, you know, a majority of the time, that's not where your time is best spent. You are the critical thinker. You are the dream maker. You are the one putting the goals out there. You are the one to lead and inspire your group. You can't do that when you're stuck in it. And there's a lot of value lost. And people, and you know, practice owners think, well, I got to treat a lot because I'm going to make so much money for my practice. Well, no. Well, at the expense of what? Your health, your family? Why don't you invest your time in something that's going to bring you in 6 to 10 times greater, and you can raise the value and profit margins of your practice and work half the time? So the owner is also, you know, how do you create a business working for you? How do you create a business working for you if you can't hire or afford salaries, right? And again, how do you build a business where you have freedom of time to help work on yourself, spend time with your family and friends? How do you build a business where you're able to increase your reimbursement and value without you having to work harder or spend less time with patients? Everyone's talking about, well, we're going to go down a 30-minute schedule and we're going to jam patients in there. Okay. So we're putting all our attention on these reimbursements that are less and less. It doesn't make sense. You know, and again, how do you build a business that creates the greatest financial value, freedoms, get the greatest valuation? And, you know, these are just some problems the practice owner has. I don't necessarily need to go through these. You know, we're fighting time because we're treating, we're scheduling, we're doing the billing, we're maybe doing sales, but you can't afford a salesperson. I mean, it's harder than ever. We can't hire. We can't expand the business because we don't have the time or the money. And then you have these outside forces, insurance carriers dictating what we're going to get paid, which is wrong. So you end up going through this cycle, emotional cycle of change. And I'm going to tell you, you know, the uninformed optimism is the practice owner. You know, you don't really know yet. You're excited. You're in practice. You're doing things. Then things start happening. You see, you can't hire therapists or reimbursements are going down. So you start to get into this informed, pessimistic stage. You're frustrated, you know, and things aren't going the greatest. Then you get down to this valley of despair, where you might want to sell the practice, like this owner I spoke to, and he doesn't know what he's going to do. And he ends up treating 60 hours a week because he thinks that's the right thing. But I'm going to tell you guys as leaders, this is at the point where the greatest change happens, because you guys are leaders. You're resilient. You're going to figure out what to do next to make the right move. And that's what my purpose to do is helping practice owners with diagnostics, how to get out of this hamster wheel in this valley of despair where you're wondering, what am I going to do? Why is my EBITDA going down? You know, why am I only getting a multiple of 5, a multiple of 6? I mean, that's okay. You know, why aren't I getting more for my practice? Well, you got to figure out what to do in the business for the business to allow yourself to grow it and get out of it and get up into stage 4, stage 5, and into this optimism to succeed and do well. These are just descriptions of those cycles, but my purpose is to help private practices get into stage 4 and stage 5. The reality is you guys have so many challenges right now because of reimbursements, profit margins, insurance cuts. You can't find staff. You got to pay them a lot of money. It puts people into this pessimistic stage 2, 3 stages, and we got to get out of it. You know, we got to get out of it. So, and how do you get to stage 4 and stage 5? Like Demi, you were saying earlier, yeah, you can put in cash. You could, oh, let's do laser. Let's do needling. Let's do this. There's nothing wrong with it. But I argue to say, to get the greatest value for your practice, you got to do more than just work on schedule book control, bring in more new patients, hiring more therapists, getting them to diversify their codes, renegotiate contracts. Those things will help. Don't get me wrong. But it's not going to create the splash near what implementing diagnostics will do for your business professionally, financially. There is no question about it. And every practice owner that says, well, it's not the right time. I got to work on, we got to take 10,000 and paint this clinic, and we got to do this, we got that. The time is now. Oh, well, we can't hire staff. You know what? I say to the practice owner, what's going to happen in 2 years, 3 years, when more and more practices, your competitors are doing diagnostics and they're hiring therapists? What's it going to be like to hire then?
But let's talk a little bit more about that, Dan, because yeah. I can see and feel the skepticism that people can have. How much time do I have to devote to this new thing? And what if I cannot make it? And will that take away time for me doing patient treatments? And maybe right now it's not the right time, but maybe the right time will be, let me rethink about this after 3 months, after 6 months, whatever. I mean, how did you make that decision if you had these same considerations back
every
then?
Every practice owner does. Everybody on this call, you know, the first thing you're thinking is, do I have the time? How am I going to go train? And how am I going to do this? Or I've got to open up this clinic. And I get it. But why invest all of your time in treating a patient where you're getting paid less and less? And to answer your question, Denny, when I made the decision, I negotiated in my head that it wasn't the right time. I was coming off, we were just coming off our aquatic therapy audit. We had hundreds of thousands of dollars Medicare owed me. It wasn't the right time. We had a fight, you know, appeal and get our money back. I could have easily said it was not the right time. And I could have been complacent. Because practice owners, directors, managers, we get stuck in what we know. And we feel that's in our comfort zone. So I said to myself, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to just sit in this current scene because it's what I know. I made the decision that it is the right time because I was looking at what is this going to do for my staff, for my patients, and for my company. You know, what's that going to do for us? And I just basically said, forget it. I'm not agreeing with the idea. It's not the right time. It absolutely is the right time. It's not the right time to be the clinician or the owner, director in a hamster wheel, churning it, thinking that you're going to raise your valuation and profitability by doing the same thing. So that's how I negotiated time. And I spoke to a practice owner that's a HODS partner. She implemented diagnostics 6 months after a hurricane in Fort Myers. It wasn't the right time for her. Fast forward 5 years later, she's got a fantastic diagnostic business. She's hired therapists that are now directors of the diagnostic business. That's phenomenal. She has students that come to PT students that come there because they have diagnostics. They want to go there for their internship. So the time is just something that we use something because we're afraid to confront something different.
Interesting. From what I gather as I hear you, is like as if you refused to operate just looking at, you know, the schedule of the day or the schedule of the week, and instead you started looking at the future, what you can create for the future. And to create a future, you have to act right now to create that future that you want to create.
Yeah, it's true. You know, what I didn't know then, like I said earlier, I wasn't thinking about, you know, I'll be transparent. I wasn't thinking then about selling my practice in 10 years or that was 10 years later. No, 7 years later. God, time flies. Lord. Oh, my God. But I was thinking I have to stay ahead of other practices. I have to stay ahead of my competitors. I got to constantly, if I'm not creating, then I'm dying. If I'm not out creating the barrier of my aquatic therapy audit, then I'm going to go subject to the barriers around me. And I promise everybody on this and who's listening to this, we are faced with the greatest barriers more than ever. And the more that we go into agreement with these barriers and continue to do the same thing, the more and more the value of your practice drops, the profit margins drop. You've got to be able to look at that and say, I'm going to out-create this barrier. And what I mean by out-create is I'm going to step forward and do something different and imagine a reimbursement of $500, $600, what that does when you get another reimbursement hit next year. What's that going to do for your practice? And what will that do for your practice when you can recruit that you have the only APTA-approved residency program? I mean, there's one small small entity in Alabama, but you got to go there and stay there. They only take like 3 a year, right?
Yeah.
So we're the only APTA-approved residency program in the country that's going to train PTs in diagnostics. So what does that do for a practice where they can recruit that and say, hey, PT, you want to come learn diagnostics, learn how to have more accuracy in your diagnosis, learn these skills that a neurologist and physiatrist do? I argue that puts us at a level much higher than getting a DPT.
Clarification that the American Physical Therapy Association is a separate body called the American Board of Physical Therapy Residencies and Fellowships, which is the accrediting body of
ABPTRFE.
Okay, just making sure
we
stay properly there. Okay?
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah,
here is another question for me. Okay, I got about the time, but when you decided to come to HADS, right, and get involved in diagnostics, you were going through some significant financial problems, right? Yep. I mean, how did you deal with that fear? How did you deal with the fear? Oh my God, I have to spend now all this money to get to do this.
Yeah. Well, one thing with HADS back then, they worked with me and structured a schedule with me that allowed me to learn the diagnostics. It allowed me to implement diagnostics. It allowed me to realize income from diagnostics. And within 6 months, we 4 or 5 times our investment. So HADS created a structure to help me implement it And then my investment, look, guys, I bought a $50,000, what was that thing called? Piece of equipment for our clinic. I dropped $50,000 on this piece of equipment, the Kinesis wall by Technogym. That's it. We spent $50,000 on it. That thing was collecting dust after year one. That's a fact. But I wrote a check for it. I put it on a credit card. So what HODS allowed me to do was my investment and what I put into it, we were 5-6 times in that money within 6 months, and I never looked back.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. So you want to, is there anything else on this deck of slides?
I don't think so. I mean, just from my standpoint, you know, after this, people who have signed up, you'll get an email. We created a practice valuation tool. I think it's pretty neat. It allows you to look at your practice financially, professionally, organizationally, where things at, where are the barriers, limitations. And then there'll be a link where you could schedule a call with me, because honestly, my own purpose, I don't have a must have, you know, I am doing this to help. We're PTs. We went into practice to help patients, and I exited my company. I don't necessarily need to work. I want to work. I want to help practices. So there'll be a link. We can go over that assessment you did. And if I can help, I can help. There's people on this call that I've had some calls with, and I'm just here to help. And I believe in, and maybe you, hopefully you hear the passion in my voice, because I believe in us. I believe in our profession. I believe in what we do. I don't believe that you need to be a hamster in a wheel. I don't believe you need to treat 50 hours a week. I don't believe the answer is seeing more patients and cutting care. I believe the answers lie in implementing services that are absolutely high level, that physicians do, that are in the hands of PTs. And I'd love to help.
Awesome. I want to ask anyone who has any questions for you that you are available right now to answer. I know that those of you who are listening to the podcast, you don't have right now the opportunity to ask questions, but those of you who are live right now in the presentation, you can either unmute your mic or you can type in your question, and I'll make sure that I'll ask Dan about this. Awesome. And you know, as people maybe typing any question, I want to find out about what does this do on the recruitment front? How does that help attract new talent and maintain them in the business?
You're talking about for me, from my perspective?
Yeah.
You know, we just, you know, we had job ads out that, you know, spoke to the very fact that, you know, one-to-one physical therapy and aquatics, we have a residency program in electrodiagnostics. How many board certified PTs and ECS are there in the country, Timmy?
They are very few. Interestingly enough, and this is true data, in the whole country, there are less than 300 board-certified electrodiagnostic therapists. I think it's right now like 270 or something like that.
Yeah.
And this residency, this board certification, the ECS board certification, is the only board certification where someone can actually earn additional dollars compared to any other board certifications. For example, you know, you finish orthopedic residency, you become board certified in orthopedics, board certified in geriatrics or sports, which is fantastic. At the same time, you build the same codes but everybody else builds. The difference here with this program is that it provides you the opportunity to build insurance, a totally different new universe of CPT codes outside of the spectrum of physical therapy, which allows physical therapists to bill and get paid for.
So when we did our recruiting, we had job ads out there saying, hey, PT, do you want to learn how to elevate your game professionally? Are you looking for true autonomy? Are you looking to improve the accuracy of your diagnosis, the PT diagnosis? Do you want to, you know, have more effective treatment plans and better outcomes? Oh, and by the way, you want to make six figures? I'll pay a PT $120,000. It brings me in $600 an hour. I might even take them on a cruise or something.
Dan, people are asking, will we have access? Okay, somebody just posted it. How to get in touch with you and the program. And yes, right now there is, okay, for those of you who are listening, you can go to hands-ondiagnostics.com. For those of you who are able to see on Facebook or in the program right now, you can go to calendly.com/EMG discovery with Daniel, and you'll be able to schedule a meeting and talk to Dan.
Yeah, I think we're going to email, like I said, we're going to email everyone that valuation tool, and it'll have a link to, you know, to talk. Look, I'm here to help, and I want people to look at me as a help flow, and that's really it. But yeah, we were definitely able to recruit. And even now, there's a great PT there. And, you know, I left the practice 2 months ago, Sean, and he will be taking the boards at some point. This guy was a new grad, came to us. He would have left. I guarantee it, he would have opened his own practice. But this guy, he's going to kill it. And he trusted the process. And I pull up a text he sent me after I left and retired from the practice. He goes, this is what he said to me. He goes, thank you for all your advice to make myself successful. I've been getting an upward trend of EMGs because of listening to you. I really appreciate the opportunity and what this is going to do for me. He texted me that last week. It's a game changer. It is what it is. I mean, it is what it is. And it makes me feel so good that this guy is 28 years old. He's going to get board certified, and it's going to change. It's going to change everything for him. Awesome. And his patients
Dan, thank you so much. This was really awesome. I think it's an eye opener for a lot of the physical therapy professionals in private practice, and looking forward for more with you in the near future. So those of you who are listening or watching from Facebook or with us here, please join our PT Innovation 2024 webinars at www.ptinnovation2024.com. And get the opportunity to attend the rest of our innovation webinars. And those of you who have not yet subscribed to our podcast, please do so. Our podcast is entitled Precision in Clinical Practice, Boosting Your Profits and Revenue via Diagnostic Testing, with great information, both business and clinical. So please join us for that in your favorite podcast channel. So that's all for today. Thank you so much, Dan. Thank you once again. And thank you all for joining us. And we'll see you all in one of our future episodes of PT Innovation 2024 or Precision in Clinical Practice podcast. Until then, take care, everyone. All right. I hope you enjoyed today's episode of Precision in Clinical Practice. See you all next week. Have a great week.